Let's resume our study in Isaiah chapter 49 today, beginning in verse number 14. Remember that Isaiah is writing all this stuff down in the late 8th century BC. It will have a huge impact in the 6th century BC, whenever Cyrus the Great gives the order for the Israelis to be able to return back to their lands after he takes down the Babylonian Empire. And we're discovering that it also has a big impact related to the first and second comings of the Messiah. When the people are going through the Babylonian exile, the Jewish people are suffering, having lost the city of Jerusalem, having lost their temple, and having lost their land because they've gone into exile up into Mesopotamia. They're going to be tempted to think that God has forgotten them. And so God addresses that issue here, now, centuries before it happens, in the words of Isaiah. And this is what it says. Isaiah 49:14, Zion said, that is the city of Jerusalem, or the people of Jerusalem is really what's in mind here. Zion said, he who is has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. So that's what they'll feel like once they've gone into exile. God's response, verse 15. Can a woman forget her nursing child that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? So think about it for a moment. Do you think moms can forsake and forget about their little baby babies that they were nursing? And in the majority of cases, no, that's not going to be the case. Understand, there are some bad moms that will engage in that forgetfulness. But God says this. Even these may forget. So he acknowledges, yeah, there's some extreme cases where moms do forget. Yet, even if that were the case, I will not forget you. So God says, I'm not going to forget my people. I'm not going to give up on you totally. Behold, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. And you can kind of think about writing something on the palm of your hand that you want to remember. And so God says, I've done that with you. I've written you on the palm of my hand. And when we were closing last time, I reminded you that Jesus took those nail prints in his hands as a permanent engraving of just how much he loves us. Jesus maintains his crucifixion scars throughout eternity, where it will always be testifying to his love for us. So verse 16, behold, I've engraved you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are continually before me, because we're having the symbolic picture of Jerusalem here. Your burdens make haste, your destroyers and those who laid you waste go out from you. So when they were destroyed by the Babylonians, lift up your eyes around and see. They all gather, they come to you. As I live, declares he who is, you shall put them all on as an ornament. You shall bind them on as a bride does. So all the tragedy, all the disaster, all the bad things that are happening, they're going to be turned around into something good eventually. Surely your waste and your desolate places and your devastated land, surely now you will be too narrow for your inhabitants, and those who swallow you up will be far away. The children of your bereavement will yet say in your ears, the place is too narrow for me, make room for me to dwell in. And then you will say in your heart, who has borne me these? I was bereaved and barren, exiled and put away. But who's brought up these? Behold, I was left alone. From where have these come? The portrayal here is in the future. when they return, thanks to God working with Cyrus the Great, they will re-inhabit the Promised Land and they will fill it with many generations. And it will feel like there's not really enough room to go around. There's so many people. And then they'll be thinking, well, how did this happen? We were like a little bitty remnant of people being taken away into exile, and now we're a great big country again. And the answer, of course, is God. Verse 22, thus says he who is God, behold, I will lift up my hand to the nations and raise my signal to the peoples, and they shall bring your sons in their bosom, and your daughters shall be carried on their shoulders. Kings shall be your foster fathers, and their queens your nursing mothers. With their faces to the ground, they shall bow down to you and lick the dust of your feet. And then you will know that I am he who is. Those who wait for me shall not be put to shame. So the picture here is that there's going to be this big turnaround eventually. And the Israeli survivors, the righteous remnant, will return as prophesied. And they will be brought by the very nations that used to be opposed to them, be the troublemakers. And of course, that's all going to come to pass at multiple times in history. We know it happens in the time of Cyrus the Great. We know that there are other returns after that, like the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. And even beyond that, more and more people keep streaming back at different times in history. Even after the Jewish nation ended with the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, we know in the modern period that we've got this great big series of returns from all over the world of ethnic Israeli people back to the nation of Israel until it is jam-packed full of millions of ethnic Israelis. And that seems to be setting the stage for what the Messiah will eventually come back to. And I think the two witnesses of the book of Revelation chapter 11 will be instrumental in bringing many of the hearts of those people back to their Messiah. But that's all kind of prophesied here, that things are going to turn around. Remember, Isaiah's writing this in the time that the Assyrian exile has taken place. He's prophesying about the coming of the Babylonian exile, but he wants to pass on God's assurance, this is not going to be the end of the story of Israel. There will be the return. There will be the glorification. Verse 24, can the prey be taken from the mighty, or the captives of a tyrant be rescued? For thus says he who is, even the captives of the mighty shall be taken, and the prey of the tyrant be rescued. For I will contend with those who contend with you, and I will save your children. I will make your oppressors eat their own flesh, and they will be drunk with their own blood as with wine. And then all flesh will know that I am he who is your Savior and your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. So God asks a couple of rhetorical questions. Can people be rescued from really tough slavers? Can people be rescued from being under a tyrant? And under a lot of circumstances, the answer would be no. But not when God's in the picture. When God decides to save us, it doesn't matter who's got us under their control. I think about Jesus telling his people that the strong man has to be bound so that he can then be plundered of his goods. And this is a prophetic reference to Jesus. Jesus comes and he binds up Satan by taking away his powerful tools. Jesus dies to destroy the works of Satan. He dies to destroy the fear of death, which Satan was using against people to keep them under his bondage. And so Jesus fulfills this with his first coming, but he also ultimately fulfills it with his second coming, because we know the book of Revelation and other Old Testament books talk about this final world leader and the false prophet that's supporting him. And even Satan seems to be involved in this latter day kingdom. And they're abusing the people. They're abusing anyone that calls on the name of the Lord. They're trying to wipe them out. And what happens? Jesus comes back and he destroys by the breath of his mouth, by the brilliance of his coming, the beast leader and the false prophet, and he throws Satan into the bottomless pit and seals him there for 1,000 years. And then Jesus rules and reigns with his saints. So all that seems to be hinted at here in the book of Isaiah in different ways with different phrases. Chapter number 50. Thus says he who is, where is your mother's certificate of divorce with which I sent her away? Now that goes back to Hosea. Remember, Hosea was supposed to be living a life that represented what was going on with God in Israel. And how God said, I'm going to send Israel away into exile, obviously. But it was supposed to be like a divorce. And there was going to be a written divorce certificate. And now God says, so where is that? Where's the documentation? Or which of my creditors is it to whom I've sold you? Behold, for your iniquities you were sold, and for your transgression your mother was sent away. And that is exactly what happened to northern Israel and what will happen to southern Judah. They will be sent out of the promised land because of their sins. God's going to do that. You remember, though, in the case of Hosea, God told Hosea once his wife Gomer was out of the house and got herself in deep into debt, that Hosea was supposed to go and redeem her and bring her back home and reestablish a righteous relationship with her, and that that was going to represent what God was going to do. So here we come back to that in the book of Isaiah, that same prophecy. Verse 2, why, when I came, was there no man? Why, when I called, was there no one to answer? Meaning, why didn't somebody do something and help? Is my hand shortened that I cannot redeem? Or have I no power to deliver? So other people may not have been able to save, but I can. Behold, by my rebuke, I dry up the sea. I make the rivers a desert. Their fish stink for lack of water and die of thirst. Remember, God is able to dry up the Red Sea. He's able to dry up the River Jordan. And then he can bring the waters back into place again. So God has power. He shouldn't be thought to be incapable of redeeming Israel. Verse 3, I clothe the heavens with blackness and make sackcloth their covering. So God can blot out the sun. He can turn the moon blood red, all that sort of stuff. Verse 4, he who is God has given me the tongue of those who are taught, that I may know how to sustain with a word him who is weary. So Isaiah says, God's giving me what I need to pass on. Morning by morning, he awakens. He awakens my ear to hear of as those who are taught. He who is God has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious. I turned not backward. I gave my back to those who strike, and my cheeks to those who pull out the beard. I hid not my face from disgrace and spitting. Now suddenly, here in the phrasing of Isaiah, we see Jesus. We see prophecies of what it's going to take to redeem not just Israel, but all of us who call upon the name of the Lord to be saved. So Jesus is the one who gave his back and his cheeks to being beaten and slapped and to have bits and pieces of his beard pulled out and to be spat at in his face. All those things happened right before the crucifixion. Verse 7. And by the way, we're building up in this section of Isaiah to a passage that is blatantly about the events surrounding the atonement and the resurrection too, by the way. Verse number 7, but he who is God helps me, and therefore I have not been disgraced. Therefore I have set my face like a flint, and I know that I shall not be put to shame. That is, ultimately, Jesus will not stay dead. That's the ultimate application of this section. He who vindicates me is near. Who will contend with me? Let us stand up together. Who's my adversary? Let him come near to me. Behold, he who is God helps me. Who will declare me guilty? Behold, all of them will wear out like a garment. The moth will eat them up. And that should probably remind you of the things that Paul wrote in the book of Romans, chapter number 8. You know, who can bring a charge against the elect? Who can bring a condemnation against those who have been redeemed by Jesus Christ? And the answer, of course, is no one. Because when we've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, no one can bring charges after that. Verse 10, who among you fears he who is and obeys the voice of his servant? Let him who walks in darkness and has no light trust in the name of he who is and rely on his God. So the call here is, get back with God. Quit rebelling against him. Only in him is the redemption. Verse 11, behold, all you who kindle a fire, who equip yourself with burning torches, walk by the light of your fire and by the torches that you've kindled. This you have for my hand, you shall lie down in torment. So, making your own light, going to your own little worship sessions with your little idols, that's not going to save you. What you need to do is come to the light of the Lord. Chapter 51. Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, you who seek he who is. Look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. That means get back to God. Get back to the basics. Look to Abraham your father and to Sarah who bore you. For he was but one when I called him that I might bless him and multiply him. So get back to the Bible. Get back to the stories. See the people of faith that God worked with to bring his promises forward. Abraham and Sarah are very great examples of that. Verse 3, for he who is comforts Zion, he comforts all her waste places and makes her wilderness like Eden, her desert like the garden of he who is. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the voice of song. Couple of different applications or a couple of different understandings of that. I think there's the metaphorical sense that when salvation came through Jesus Christ's first coming, it's a brand new life. We've been born again and we're excited and we're happy. The joy of the Lord is our strength, right? But there's also the reality of the second coming of Jesus where all that is going to be literally true. That a new heaven, a new earth is going to come into existence in which righteousness dwells. And all the waste places are going to be perfectly fertile and marvelously bountiful. Verse 4, give attention to me, my peoples. Give ear to me, my nation. For a law will go out from me, and I will set my justice for a light to the peoples. That's Jesus. That's a prophecy about Jesus coming. My righteousness draws near, my salvation has gone out, and my arms will judge the peoples. The coastlands hope for me, and for my arm they wait. So Jesus comes, He dies, he rises again, he ascends on high, he sends his Holy Spirit, he sends out his gospel, not just to the Israelis, but to all the peoples of the world. And that's being prophesied here. Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look at the earth beneath, for the heavens vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and they who dwell in it will die in like manner. That's the second coming stuff. All this creation is going to be done away with. But, look at the last phrase in verse 6. But my salvation will be forever, and my righteousness will never be dismayed. So Jesus, who is he who is his salvation, his salvation, his atoning death and resurrection, that is going to be the eternal provision for those that call upon the name. Verse 7, listen to me, you who know righteousness, the people in whose heart is my law. You remember that in the New Testament, a couple of different places that talks about how God's going to take out our old heart and put in a new heart, and our hearts will be written with the law of God. Love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's going to be what controls us. Fear not the reproach of man, nor be dismayed at their revilings. For the moth will eat them up like a garment, and the worm will eat them like wool. But my righteousness will live, or will be forever, my salvation to all generations. So all the unrighteous people, they're going to disappear from the story. They will come under ultimate judgment. But the righteous people who call upon the name of the Lord, they're going to be around with God forever. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of he who is. Awake as in days of old, the generations of long ago. Was it not you who cut Rahab in pieces, that pierced the dragon? Now, Rahab here is a representation of the, I'm going to use the word advisedly here, okay? Mythological sea creature, the sea dragon, that was defeated and brought the world into existence. And it's probably kind of a reference back to the original fight of Satan and his angels against God, trying to take over things, and how God defeated them from the very beginning. But here's the deal. The name Rahab also got connected to Egypt. And we know, of course, that Israel was brought out of Egypt by God demonstrating his power through the plagues, which were all slaps against the different gods and goddesses that the Egyptians believed in. And so God basically cut Rahab in pieces and pierced the dragon whenever he brought Israel out of Egypt. Verse number 10, was it not you who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made the depths of the sea a way for the redeemed to pass over? See, that's leaving Egypt, going through the Red Sea, coming into the wilderness, and from there into the promised land. God did all that at the time of the Exodus. And the ransomed of he who is shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. So God's redemption out of Egypt then becomes the symbol of the future, that God is going to redeem us out of sin, and we will assemble to him with joy and honor. But it goes beyond that. Jesus is going to redeem us out of this world of chaos. With his second coming, he will resurrect the righteous dead, and he will transform the righteous living. We will be caught up together to meet the Lord in the air. Thus, we will always be with him, and we will be gathered together with him to Zion, to Jerusalem, where Jesus will rule and reign for 1,000 years as just the kickoff to his eternal reign. And sorrow and sighing, all of that's going to be gone. Every tear is going to be wiped away, and the old things are not going to be around anymore. book of Isaiah kind of ends on that theme later. Verse 12, I am he who comforts you. Who are you that you are afraid of man who dies, of the Son of Man who is made like grass, and have forgotten he who is your maker, who stretched out the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth? And you fear continually all the day because of the wrath of the oppressor when he sets himself to destroy? Where is the wrath of the oppressor? So this is God saying, why are you so afraid of human stuff when it's me that you should be putting your trust in? He who is bowed down shall speedily be released. He shall not die and go down to the pit, neither shall his bread be lacking. I am he who is your God, who stirs up the sea so that its waves roar. He who is of the hosts is his name. So another reminder from God to anyone that will listen. I'm the one who made things. I'm the one who flooded things. I'm the one who brought them into the new land. I am the one who brought them out of Egypt into the promised land. I am the one that does all of that stuff. You need to be putting your trust in me instead of being all worried about all the other things in the world. And that does kind of remind me again of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, about us not being anxious about all this stuff. But instead, we're supposed to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. All the other stuff will fall into place. Let's finish with verse number 16. And I have put my words in your mouth and covered you in the shadow of my hand. So God's word has been given to his people, establishing the heavens and laying the foundations of the earth and saying to Zion, you are my people. When God claims us as his, then we need to quit worrying about anybody and everybody that threatens us. Because God is greater than anyone that might threaten to do something to his people.